And from the KTOO newsroom in Juneau, I'm Yvonne Crumry. Ironman Alaska has canceled plans to hold events in Juneau over the next 2 years. Liz Perry from Travel Juneau said the triathlon organizer called her to say that the decision was an economic one. They blamed inflation.
We have not burned any bridges with them. They are ever so grateful to the community of Juneau for everything that we did for them, and they want to keep that door open for the possibility of a future event.
More than 800 athletes from around the country came to Juneau in August for the Ironman and competed in driving rain. While that was fewer than the original expectation, the event did end up bringing in an estimated $8 million to the local economy. Perry said the fact that Juneau proved it can host an event of this scale also means there's potential for similar events.
It kind of opens the door for us to keep an eye out for, you know, similar events, and whether they are athletic events or other kinds of events that the town has the capacity to put on.
Travel Juneau paid $50,000 for licensing for this year's event. Perry said they had a contract with Ironman for the 2023 and 2024 races, but had not made any payments yet. Sitka's planning department will investigate whether several sections of city and state-owned land can be opened for housing development. KCAW's Catherine Rose reports.
Finding solutions to Sitka's housing crisis is a goal of both the city's comprehensive and strategic plans. At a recent Sitka Planning Commission meeting, Planning Director Amy Ainsley highlighted tracts of municipal land that might be good for housing development. Ainsley said she focused on large swaths of land that are close to existing power and water connections.
As we have found in all of our other studies, the farther you are away from utility infrastructure, the more expensive the cost is going to be. And if the goal is affordable housing, then obviously having high utility expenses is, you know, contravenes the whole goal, right?
Ainsley said a large section of city-owned land behind Sitka High School is at the top of her list. She said the city should also consider state-owned land through the Indian River Valley.
And so I think it's an area worth exploring. And with the current administration, there has been some interest in working with municipalities to open state lands. And particularly to give state lands to municipalities, and, you know, there's a lot of focus on housing too. So I think it's a good opportunity for us to be working with the state on this piece of land.
Ainsley said there are three questions staff need to answer in evaluating the land: whether it's safe and buildable, how much housing can be built in the area, and how much it will cost. To answer those questions, Ainsley said she's budgeting for a study of all of the properties, which she hopes to kick off by the beginning of the next fiscal year and fund through grants. Commissioner Katie Riley said she was excited about the prospect of opening up more land for housing, but she noted that it doesn't solve the immediate problem of affordable housing in Sitka.
You know, houses are built, they're sold to the folks who can afford them, which a lot of the times are not necessarily the folks that are looking for housing in town. So, having a discussion, you know, amongst this body of like what affordability is, what that means. I know that it's a topic that we all hold a lot of different opinions on, and so I'm excited to explore that as well.
During public comment, Sitka resident Martina Kurzer said she hoped that further down the line, developers would consider options beyond single-family homes. She recalled apartment buildings she saw on a recent trip to Juneau's Auk Bay.
I saw three buildings that were very attractive. They looked like a very beautiful apartment building overlooking the harbor there. And I was wondering, they have a lot more space than we do, but is there anything we could do? How could we change our thinking to make the best with the limited available space we have? And
Ainsley, the planning director, said in the new year, the commission should hold a special session to seek more community feedback on the future of housing development in Sitka. Reporting in Sitka, I'm Catherine Rose.
Alaska had a historic wildfire season this year. The abnormally warm and dry early summer months brought hundreds of fires, reaching 1 million acres at the earliest date ever recorded. By season's end, more than 3 million acres had burned. With that rising acreage comes a rising financial toll, and a new study from the Pew Charitable Trusts examined six state governments to determine how they're paying that toll. They found that the actual cost of fires was often obscured. In Alaska, for example, the state routinely underfunded wildfire costs up front, only to pay them off later. Alaska Public Media's Michael Finelli spoke with study author Peter Muller, who explains that Alaska uses a unique after-the-fact budgeting option called ratification.
This is an interesting process that we really only saw, it was specific to Alaska. Alaska allows the their emergency agencies, their forestry agency, to spend above their appropriated amounts for wildfire spending. And then they send a request for ratification of that to the legislature that gets approved sometimes a year or two after the money has actually been spent.
Why does it matter that an over-reliance on post-fire funding mechanisms like that emergency or supplemental appropriations might obscure the true costs of fires?
So if you're trying to figure out how much to spend on mitigation to invest to keep those suppression costs down, it's really important to know how much you're actually spending on suppression. If you are under budgeting, if you're under budgeting for suppression in the front end, you might not think it's worth it to make the to make a large investment in mitigation. But the better view you have of how large that suppression cost actually is, the more informed you can be in your decision-making in investing for the long term and investing for those more preventative measures.
From a budgetary perspective, why would it make more sense to spend on preventing fires than putting them out?
So as these fires are getting more and more expensive to fight year after year, the only way to reduce that cost in the long term is to spend money now on mitigation efforts, things that will reduce the severity of the future fires and slow the growth of the spending needs going forward.
Is there a way to measure whether prevention and mitigation measures have been effective? I mean, how do you know how many fires would have otherwise happened?
That's a great question. It depends on the type of mitigation to some degree. There aren't great studies that put an actual dollar amount on individual mitigation efforts. What I can say, Alaska in particular has done a lot of focus on fire breaks. And I believe there have been anecdotally some notable examples of communities being protected by these fire breaks that were installed in advance. And you can see the fire burn up to the break, but not cross over it, therefore protecting numbers of homes. If you do mitigation activities, what you are hopefully doing is making it so the next fire is a small, manageable fire and not a giant, out-of-control, catastrophic fire. Putting a dollar amount on the number of catastrophic fires that didn't happen is going to be an inherent challenge. We didn't hear anyone who had done a great job of putting a specific dollar amount, but experts we spoke to were pretty much universally in agreement that mitigation efforts were going to reduce the long-term costs of wildfire and were an essential part of this process.
The report says that Alaska, for the first time in around 15 years, did set aside $15 million for fire fuel reduction. Did you get a sense from talking to experts here that they might focus more on mitigation going forward?
Experts definitely spoke of a lot of interest in investing in mitigation, how that was a priority that had risen to to a higher level than it had been in the past. Particularly speaking of a lot of interest in building more fire breaks to protect communities in the state. The money that was appropriated was done through the capital budget, which is a one-time process. So there is no evidence that there is something in place now that would provide continued ongoing funding, but it certainly was something they were expressed a lot of interest in.
Peter Moeller is one of the authors of a new study from Pew Charitable Trust on state wildfire spending. A former contractor has been sentenced for conspiracy and bribery related to military contracts at Air Force bases in Alaska. A release from the Alaska U.S. Attorney's Office says Best Choice Construction LLC owner Ryan Dalbach of Mesa, Arizona, previously pled guilty. Dalbach was ordered to serve 42 months in prison and pay a $170,000 fine and $16,000 in restitution. Court records show Dalbach had agreed to pay over $460,000 in bribes to former U.S. Air Force contracting official Brian Lowell Nash II in exchange for confidential bidding information that helped him win contracts. And as for the weather, here in Juneau, it's currently 31 degrees and cloudy. There may be a little bit of snow tonight, but after this afternoon, it's expected to clear up, and it's supposed to stay clear until Sunday night. The high is likely to be around 32 tomorrow and the low around 17. You're listening to KTOO. It's just shy of 5 o'clock.